You're listening to a podcast from Jubilee Church, Farnham. To find out more, visit www.jubilee.church.
For those who weren't here last week, it's available online and you can pick it up if you want. But I got a bit nostalgic telling the story of how Jubilee came to be 20 years ago on the Queen's Jubilee. That was the picture we had for the Queen's Golden Jubilee. But how the name Jubilee wasn't really connected with that, but with the rich idea from the Old Testament of the year of Jubilee, where a big trumpet was blown and there was an amazing economic and cultural, environmental, communal reset for the nation. Every 50 years, there was a sort of moment of resetting everything. And then we talked a little bit about that. There was a sort of, because it resulted in a resetting of relationships with God, with each other, and with creation, its very self. And then following that, we explored a little bit last week about how Jesus, when he came out of the wilderness, perhaps it's significant, he came out of the wilderness at the beginning of his ministry, and he started his ministry by standing in the temple and reading Isaiah 61. And we looked at that little moment last week where he said all of that Jubilee vision of that wonderful year of the Lord's favor was going to be fulfilled in him. And he blew a trumpet, if you like, to say he was the ultimate ultimate Jubilee. And and just like in the years of Jubilee where there was a great celebration, why wouldn't you celebrate when there's such freedom and renewal and a major reset? Jesus was saying there's going to be much resetting and as he started his ministry. And how we need a reset, don't we? As I've been thinking about Jubilee, you know, I wish I could, you know, get rid of all your mortgages and credit cards and give you land that you used to own back. I'm not sure I can do that. Like happened in the old days, in the Old Testament. But there can be a new reset, and that's what we wanted to look at last week. And I used three words last week just to sort of capture it, this sense of renewal, restoration, and reconciliation, and really said, I feel these are words for us in 2022, and we're going to be looking at them in different ways over these next few months. I'm really excited about it. I think there's some angles and perspectives we can bring into these areas that are going to be really helpful for us. But overall, the 2022 sort of goal, if you like, was all to do, in my mind, about connecting people to Jesus, to the church, to each other. And just at the end, I just unpacked a little bit about John 15 and Jesus' encouragement to remain in him. And I think that's what he was saying, really, this morning in some of those words. Remain in him, and as we do that, we will bear fruit. I think I finished with the idea of the prodigal son returning as well. Suggested, I just think in 2022, there's going to be many returning, prodigals returning to Jesus, to the church, disconnected, becoming connected once again. All these R's, crumbs, reset, renewal, restore, remaining, returning, being revived. 2022 is revving up really well, and we're going to find ours all over the place, I think, because a trumpet is blowing, I think. There's a time of reset that is exciting, because God is in the renewal and restoration business, renewing people and restoring his church. That's what he's doing. That's his work. As I said last week, 20 years ago, there was a wave of God's Spirit across this land, many other parts in the world, and bringing a renewal to people, a fresh infilling of his Spirit in people's lives, a fresh sense of God's presence amongst his people. Many of us were alive at that time, and it was a wonderful time. It was a great joy to see the Holy Spirit doing a work in people's lives where a passion returned, a sense of conviction, a sense of The presence of God was so tangible. It was a wonderful season to be part of. And as God's people became renewed, it started renewing and bringing a restoration to the church. For many, the idea of church turned from buildings and denominations, hierarchical structures and robes, to seeing the church itself restored in ways more rooted in what the Bible describes the church as. We looked at it a little bit last week, Acts 2, that wonderful passage about what that first church was, how they did things. But we see in the Bible lots of different pictures about what the church should be that we talked about lots over the years. For those newer to us, we often talk about the church as people. It's not the building. That's why we meet in this school hall rather than in some wonderful fancy building. Although some days fancy buildings do feel a lot nicer, don't they? But anyway, school hall is where we are because church is about the people. This was a restoration of an idea that came about. Living stones being built into a living temple joined together for the very presence of God. That was a restoration of a New Testament idea of the church. For us, the church was no longer about a separated priesthood. You know, I grew up in a church which literally had a divide between the people and the altar, and the priest went to the altar, and you never got to see it because there was a big screen in front of it. But a new thing was happening, and the church began to see itself as a community of priests. It's why I don't call myself the Reverend Sean, unless all of you are prepared to be called Reverend as well. I even sort of try to avoid being called the minister in some ways, because we're all ministers. The priesthood of all believers is what came to be restored in the church in those days. Not ministering at an altar in a physical building, but ministering to each other on the altars of our lives, if you like. A community of priests together. That's what we became. We got a fresh vision for it. The church became seen as a loving family, gathering the lonely and outcast where they could feel welcomed and belong and find a home. This was restored images of the church that we see in the scriptures, but somehow the church had lost in its religiosity. We saw the church as a diverse body, interconnected in ways that honor and values the lowly, and in which when one part hurts, the whole church hurts. These were themes that came out in this restoration of what the New Testament teaches about the Bible. We got a vision, actually, of the church as a mighty army. The very first week, I think it was Steve, or even the first few months, I think it was Steve, had a vision, had a prophetic word about us being a battalion joining an army and changing the course of the battle. That was a word of God on Jubilee, right, 20 years ago, that we've seen worked out in lots of different ways. The church began to feel more confident as an army, not fighting people, but fighting darkness in this world and seeing a light come into the world, the kingdom of light advancing, using God's people. We saw ourselves as a beautiful, pure bride. There was lots of talk about that in those days, about a bride getting ready for Jesus and the marriage that ultimately brings unity to all things. These were wonderful new ideas at the time that we've lived with for 20 years, so they're very familiar to us. But there is a season of remembering, restoring our own vision for what the church can be. It was exciting, compelling picture in my early days of my journey. I thought, that is something I want to be part of. I want to get stuck into. I want to see, come to all that it could be in the years to come. And we've been trying to do it. It's why we end up with our little five little statements. We, an army going to share the good news. We're a family gathering people where they can belong. We're a body growing, world-changing disciples. We're a bride giving herself to serve others in ministry, and we glorify God as a wonderful holy temple of living stones. We formed our purpose around some of these ideas and some of these images. And we came to realize that you don't go to church. We are the church. And all the images in the Bible of the church paint it like that. They're paint pictures of people connecting in the purposes of God. See, the church isn't something you go to, or something that does things for you, or something you watch. It is you and me connected. A living temple, a family, a body, an army, a bride. That's what the church is. Now, you can watch church, and there's some great ways that you can be ministered to. I do. But at its essence, the church is about people connected and gathered and being something that is wonderful and marvelous. It's why in our final column on our little grid that we give when we do our little introducing Jubilee, our getting to know Jubilee, is that there's a sense in which all these pictures encourage us to have a sense of, well, what is my role in this? What is my witness? What is my way of relating to others? What is my walk with Jesus? What is my work, my service within the church? What's my worship? What's my contributions into worship? Because the church is us. It's not something else. It's not other people. The church is us. And there's a sense in which God's resetting that and renewing that, restoring our vision for that in these coming years, I think. And what brings it all alive is that Jesus is at the center of it. All these images we find in the Bible is of people connected with each other and connected to Jesus. He's the commander of the army. He's the father of the family. He's the bridegroom of the bride, the cornerstone of the living temple, the head of the body. He's the one through to whom everything revolves, the one who is in charge, the one who is the head, the one who is the source. See, we can build community outside of the church, clubs, neighborhoods, schools, workplaces, and that's all good. But do you know what? The church is different. It connects people to Jesus and connects followers of Jesus to each other for the sake of the world, to see the kingdom of darkness defeated and the kingdom of light advance. And that is the purposes that we're part of, even in these difficult times that we've been through, this pandemic. So for 20 years, we've been trying to be our little part of the worldwide church that is being renewed and restored into something beautiful and wonderful and amazing. And as we move into 2022, I think our vision remains that, isn't it? It's in the scriptures. That's what the scriptures say the church is. But do you know what? There's opportunity to reset some of the ways we do things, some of the ways we work that out. And I think that is what we're embarking on in this next season as a church. The overarching story of the Bible is one of renewal, restoration, reset. If you read the Bible, if you get a grasp of the story of the Bible, it is an amazing story. Sadly, there's a generation, and there's probably many, who have lost touch with that story and have adopted other stories. But the story we read in the scriptures is a wonderful story that starts with humanity walking and talking with God in paradise, and it ends with humanity walking and talking with God in a renewed heaven and a renewed earth. It is a wonderful story as you read it. Between the garden and the renewed heaven and earth, it's a story of decreation. There's a little picture here. That's just the repair shop that our family love, which was a picture I thought of when we were looking at God in the renewal business. But there was creation. There was a picture in the Bible of decreation. And then there's this wonderful, hopeful picture of recreation. That death and resurrection is something that happens many times as you read through the scriptures. Because the Bible is so full of hope that God is about restoring things. He doesn't leave things broken. He doesn't leave things in a state of deconstruction. His purpose is, his redemptive purpose is to restore all things, to make them new, to make things right. And the epic end of the big Bible story is not that Christians leave one's bodies behind and ascend to some divine realm to enjoy as disembodied bliss, hanging out with angels, riding on clouds, drinking Red Bull. That's not the image of the future. That's more influenced by Greek philosophy. But it can seep into Christians sometimes, and it ends up in an attitude where this is all just bad. But if you believe the right things, if you have immaculate behavior, you can escape all of this and enjoy a blissful future. People can become so heavenly minded, they're no earthly good. And we don't want to be that, because the story we've become part of is much greater than an escapism to another realm where God lives. Our story is one of God making his home with us, healing us, restoring every aspect of brokenness in this world that he has given to us as our home. The Bible's big story closes with this wonderful vision of heaven descending and God making his dwelling place amongst man. And at the end of the Bible, God proclaims, "See, I make all things new." There's a wonderful passage in Revelation 21. The Catholic writer Thomas Merton once said that your life is shaped by the end you live for. It's quite a profound statement. It's true for individuals, for humanity, it's true for creation itself. All of creation, all of humanity is heading towards a destination. And that destination is being spoken of at the end of the scriptures, at the end in Revelation 21. This is how the story ends, that God will make his dwelling place amongst humanity. Heaven will come down and be united to the earth, and then God will sit down on his throne and declare, "I am making all things new." I read this week, it was just caught my attention, that we can lose the meaning of that little phrase, "making all things new," by the way that the Bible translates the Greek into English. In the Greek, there's two words for new. There's the word neos, which means brand new, and the word kainos, which means something that is made new or restored to its former glory. So when God returns, he's going to sit down and say, "I'm going to make all things kainos." In other words, he's going to restore everything to how it was in the beginning. The Garden of Eden, where there was no sin or sickness or suffering. Humanity fully alive in relationship to God, fully alive in relationship to one another, fully alive in relation to with creation itself. The world God created, the world he loved so much that he sent his only son to die for, isn't so much thrown in the garbage, but renewed, restored, recreated. Death and grief and pain will be long in the past, but a renewed, restored heaven and earth will take place and all creation will be flourishing. And that's a vision we have for the future, but one that we can see breaking in amongst us now. That's why God is in the renewing and restoration business. That process is beginning. That process is at hand. That process is there, where God is renewing and restoring all that he's doing. I read this week a story about a tear fund project. Biarma is over in Africa. It's great to have Daniel here, who works for Tear Fund. If you haven't met Daniel, at the back there, give us a wave, Daniel. Works for Tear Fund. It's great to have Anne-Marie here as well, who works for Christian Aid, similar sort of thing. But this is a wonderful story of a project in the poor part of northern Uganda that I just felt I wanted to share with you because I think it's going to be a little breakthrough for some of you. Not that you're called to go to Uganda next necessarily or anything like that, but contained within it is something of this idea that God can do something in a transformative way that is amazing. Began when Tear Fund began asking local churches and community leaders, what resources do you have that could be used to help alleviate the suffering in your community? It's a very poor community. And the standard answer was nothing. They lived in extreme poverty and experienced its sort of dehumanizing effects that so often erodes dignity and results in despair and diminishes hope in communities. But this story was about a man who had come to faith in Jesus and his journey from despair to hope. And it was so wonderful to read this story. Though he had only had a few possessions, he was terribly poor. He owned a bit of swamp land. And when this first bit of research was there, he didn't mention that he had this bit of swamp because he was quite embarrassed about it, because it was a breeding ground for mosquitoes. That meant malaria rates were really high in that area. His bit of swampland was literally killing his community and had become the primary cause of poverty. But God is in the renewal and restoration business. And gradually the man and others began to think differently, and eventually a plan began to emerge. They'd dig a pond in which they could breed fish. So 20 men started digging, and after 30 days they began to reach the water table and the beginnings of a pond emerged. And when it reached an adequate depth, the volunteer workers began to breed fish, and before long there was enough fish for the man to feed his family. Over time, there was enough fish to feed not only his family, but others, and even to sell fish to enable him to send his kids to school. It's a key pathway out of poverty. And eventually, a second pond was dug, and the income enabled them to employ people to manage the ponds. And their vision expanded to dig more ponds so that the kids in the community could all go to school. See, God's in the renewal and restoration business. The swampland that once contributed extreme poverty now provided food for the hungry, education for the unschooled, and housing for the homeless, and jobs for the unemployed. What's more, and it's really tickled me, was that they did some research because they couldn't work out why the fish were so prolific at breeding. And it turned out the fish were feeding on the mosquito larvae, which meant that the malaria rates had plummeted. So the land that was literally killing people was now bringing life. Now that is a kingdom story, isn't it? And what brought about this revolution of thinking? How was this attitude of despair renewed and enabled by a different mindset to develop? Well, in the article, it said that community leaders, church leaders had tried to look at what had caused this in this area, this wave of entrepreneurialism to sweep the area. And they put it down to the gospel and the scriptures. As people reading the Bible and encountering the risen Jesus, everything began to change because they got caught up in a different story. The good news of what Jesus had done broke a victim mentality. The people who once said, "I've got nothing and nothing to give," were transformed into people who said, "God is for me. Who can be against me?" It was a different mindset that enabled them to look differently at what they had in their hands. See, the message of the gospel restores dignity and empowered men and women to bring restoration to others. God's in the renewal and restoration business and can do a wonderful transformative work. I read this, it's a World Antifa Fund. I know it's not like all down to you. I read this week a powerful quote that I'd love you to take on board. The story you live in is the story you live out. The story you live in is the story you live out. The man in the swamp could have remained a victim of his circumstances, thinking he had nothing to offer. But the gospel came. A bigger story came of a God who makes it his business to renew and restore. See, God is in the business of renewing all things and restoring creation, including the humanity he made in his image and his likeness. And you know what? This is the challenge for us in 2022. That we immerse ourselves in this unfolding drama and story and find a fresh belonging there, a fresh purpose there, a fresh hope for the future there. And it works its way out in all sorts of ways. That we are going to be adventuring on together. And as we do, stories of renewal and restoration will undoubtedly follow. Not necessarily story about ponds, but stories about restored people. Individuals, families, communities, businesses, because God is in the renewal and restoration business. And God is on a mission to make all things new. And I think is inviting you and me to further grasp this story in this next season that is going to be exciting. And it starts with what you've got in your hands. It's not that God goes and you become somebody else. God starts with you, where you are. We as a church can wish that we had all sorts of resources, all sorts of things, but we start where we are. And God can begin to renew and restore what we have. And you know what? That is a work of God that is beginning to happen even now. So there's, I think, a message in this for us as individuals and for us as a group of people together, a church. There is a time of personal renewal for us all. And as we are renewed, the church is restored into the glory it can be. So God is coming on us if we're open to renew us at the beginning of this year, I believe. The Bible commentator says this: nothing paralyzes our lives like the attitude that things can never change. We need to remind ourselves that God can change things. Outlook determines outcome. If we only see the problems, we'll be defeated. But if we see the possibilities in the problems, we can have victory. So do you know what? I look at things like Weydon Christian Center and I think, oh, I wish I had something else. But do you know what? I forget who it was. It was Claire, I think, said to us, God's saying, use what you've got in your hands. And change my whole thinking about it. And so we do want to revamp Weydon Christian Center. We felt God was leading to that, us with that, when somebody said, I'll give you £15,000 to do it. And I thought, that's probably from God. And so we're wanting to see a number of things worked on in this next phase. We're going to renew Weydon Christian Center so it becomes a community hub that can begin to see life come into that community. We want to see our small groups reset, renewed, restored. And you know what? I just want to honor our group leaders. Through this pandemic, it has been a hardest time to run a group, small group. And I just want to honor you. You have done absolute fabulous job. I'm so grateful. You've cared for people. You've done a fabulous job. And I know that you're exhausted. But we need to see a fresh reset for our groups. And even this week, I've had people say, look, I'm wondering whether God's calling me to be a group leader. And so over these next few weeks, we're going to be looking at small groups. We're going to be looking at seeing the Weydon Christian Center develop. We've got plans now developing through the rest of this year that are hard to make specific at this point in terms of all of the things that are going on, but that I am getting a growing excitement about. I think Easter is going to be a magnificent moment for us. In June, we're collaborating with the Palace, and they have, they're a little bit hard to negotiate with, but they have decided to call the May bank holiday, or the June bank holiday weekend, the Jubilee Big Lunch for us. And so the whole of the nation, in fact, is going to have street parties that are called the Jubilee Big Lunch. And we just think, do you know what? There's something that we can do to become visible in the good of that, isn't there? So the whole nation are going to be celebrating the Jubilee Big Lunch. June is going to be a big month in our nation. Not because of us, but because of the Queen. But in our area, do you know what? God is going to use the revamp centre to reach a community in a wonderfully special way. All through June, that's going to happen. We've got the Woods Weekend happening. We've got New Day. We're looking in September, our 20th anniversary, to have some really big celebrations. November, we've got a big mission happening in the town. There's a whole load of things that are being reset and renewed as we seek to be a church moving into this 2020 time. I've got a particular heart for young people. I've just got broken heart that there's probably under 0.5% of young people in Farnham go to church, and that's not good. We've got to see a restoration of a generation emerge that is full of God, full of a passion for the church, and there's some exciting things beginning to come together for that as well. So there is lots going on in the background as we begin to plan. We're going to be going through that over these next few weeks, but in it all, I want us to know that God is in the restoration and renewal business. And his message to you this morning is, this is a time for renewal for you in your walk with him. To change old ways of thinking. To those who've given up, really, on their journey with Jesus. It's time to say, no, God is in the renewal, restoration business. I am going to read the Bible. I am going to pray. I am going to get stuck in. God's going to restore dreams that you've had, visions you've had of doing things. God's going to bring new ministries to you. You're going to say, do you know what? I never thought I would do that. But God, I think, is drawing me towards that. There is a point of renewal and restoration happening amongst us that is going to be so exciting that I think we don't know what, you know, we are going to be overjoyed by, as we see it coming to being. And I think there's a moment where we need to say, what am I going to, what story am I going to live in? Am I going to live in a story as a victim? Am I going to live in as a story that's just about the pursuit of wealth? Am I going to live in a story that has been told me as my upbringing? Or am I going to be transformed by the renewing of my mind to live in another story that's about restoration, renewal? God is here to do a major reset for people. And I think that is a work of the Spirit that's going to be amazing. So you're up for a reset? Yeah. If you are, do you want to stand with Juliet?